Welcome to Virtual Economy, a podcast about the business of games for the rest of us. We're your hosts. I'm Amanda Farrow.
And I am Michael Footer.
Each episode, we'll cover the biggest business beats and bring in expert commentary from lawyers, analysts, and industry pros.
But not today.
Not today. It's just us.
Today, you have a news roundup show. Every once in a while, we sit back and look at all of the news that has flowed through the game industry. And
we just let the best bits.
We do. We let it wash over us and we figure out the best bits of new seaweed to share with you.
Kelpie. All right. What's the first big thing we're going to cover today?
First big thing. Microsoft announced a number of things related to its financials. Within that is always the Xbox piece of the puzzle. Now, Microsoft has long since stopped reporting on the number of Xbox Live subscribers regularly and the number of consoles sold, so...
I'm so sad about that. Like, it just... it makes it difficult to do our jobs.
It does, and at the same time, it fits right into everything that you and I have been talking about for a long time about
which
Microsoft.
Which is the ecosystem.
Exactly, and speaking of which, Xbox Game Pass has crossed 10 million subscribers.
Mike, how long has Xbox Game Pass been a thing?
A couple years now, right?
I think it's a year and a half.
Wow. So Game Pass Ultimate and PC was announced at last E3. So that's about 11 months old at this point, or coming up on 11 months.
Yeah.
And Game Pass before that was a little bit of time, but it's only gotten better. There's still 100 plus games on the service.
Mm-hmm.
Streets of Rage 4 just launched on Game Pass. So that's pretty cool.
Streets of Rage 4 looks great, by
the way. Yeah, I'm looking forward to checking that out. But the other piece of news that they announced was that xCloud, as we figured, we talked about this. I can't remember when we talked about this, though.
I think that it was a cloud gaming thing, because you and I were talking a lot about cloud gaming back in December. I was working on some pieces for Game Daily about cloud gaming when Stadia launched.
Sure.
So that was the conversation that came up. It's like, okay, well, how do they make Project xCloud viable? By pairing it with Xbox Game Pass.
Which is exactly what's going to be happening. And there'll be more information on that, potentially, next Thursday.
Ooh. There's going to be an Inside Xbox next Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific. So what they're going to be doing is they're going to be showcasing a bunch of third-party Xbox Series X games, and they will be showcasing the first-party games later this summer.
Yes, and one of the games we might see next week, although we're not sure yet. Today, Assassin's Creed Valhalla, the next game in the Assassin's Creed series, was announced. We know it's coming to Xbox One and PlayStation 4, so it'll be on current generation consoles. We know that it will be on Xbox Series X and PlayStation 5, so it'll be on next generation consoles, and it'll be coming to PC, of course. The big thing that jumped out, and Wario64 called this out, according to Amazon UK, the listing on that storefront, that Assassin's Creed Valhalla will use smart delivery on Xbox One and Xbox Series X. So now we know that Microsoft's using it for all their first-party games.
Yeah, of course.
We know that CD Projekt Red is using it for Cyberpunk, which is huge. And now we know that Ubisoft, which isn't super surprising because Ubisoft tends
they're
to dabble.
They're always on the bleeding edge of technology. They were embracing VR long before many other publishers were getting into that game. Like, they went hard into Rift.
They did. Werewolves Within and Star Trek Bridge Crew.
Eagle Flight. That was the other one.
That one was cool. So Ubisoft is usually there at the beginning. They wanna get in early on new tech. But this one is interesting because now you have a major third-party publisher who's saying we are going to forego our typical cross-gen revenues that come from the double dip. People buying on Xbox One and then buying on Xbox Series X. Nope, you buy on Xbox One, you want to jump in when that game launches, even if it's before the consoles have launched. You get your Xbox Series X when that hits, you own the game already, and you pick up right where you left off.
Exactly. It's amazing. It's extremely consumer friendly. It's friendly to folks that are like, I don't know when I'm going to pick up a Series X, but I still want to be able to play the biggest games, especially the biggest third-party games on that system.
It's going to be really interesting. Again, this is another moment where Microsoft's decision to go with smart delivery and now third-party publishers stepping in and saying, yeah, we like this idea, putting pressure on Sony to get its stuff together and figure out what it's doing about cross-gen games.
Because there's no information. Like, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago that Was it a couple of weeks? Be more than that.
Quarantine.
Yeah, working under quarantine is weird. But yeah, we have talked about that in terms of Sony not giving us any information about how they are handling cross-generation play or whether or not they're supporting it at all.
Right. And again, this isn't to say that Sony won't do this.
But we don't have any information.
We don't know. And Sony is letting Microsoft... This reminds me of cross-play this gen all over again, where up until Sony does something and says something that is, in this case, consumer-friendly and mirrors what Microsoft is doing... Microsoft is getting to write the narrative on next gen right now.
Which, quite frankly, mirrors what happened during the PlayStation 3 era, mm-hmm. where it was a trade-off between, you know, Sony dominated in the previous generation. They came back for the PlayStation 3, and it was kind of, eh?
Yeah.
There were some good games on PlayStation 3, don't get me wrong. They come in hard with PlayStation 4. Are they seriously going to go walk down the same path that they walked down two generations ago?
I don't know. We'll have to find out.
It is looking that way,
though. There's another console manufacturer.
There is.
There is one more, and they're doing really, really well for themselves.
They really are. They are eating everyone's lunches and then making more lunches and eating those as well. So one of the things that came up today is Nintendo announced that they would not be holding their regular E3 Nintendo Direct. That's where they highlight all of the vast majority of their games that are going to be coming out during the holiday season. So from the end of August up until December, that's usually where they end up announcing during E3.
And potentially some bigger stuff that's coming down the road. Like, I wouldn't be surprised when they eventually get to it, that we'll see some Breath of the Wild 2
in there as well.
Maybe Metroid Prime 4 will make a comeback. Now, again, the way we're hearing about this, Jeff Grubb reported it on GamesBeat. He had heard this, according to the story, from partners that were told who were going to be announcing games.
Yeah, exactly.
Because these E3 press conferences are always opportunities for big announcements.
Exactly. And not just first-party announcements, but third-party announcements. And they usually do a little mini nindies in the middle of these bigger press conferences. Yeah, they do
like a huge sizzle reel.
Of like, hey guys, check out what's going on with the indies on the Nintendo Switch.
And that piece of the press conference is a beast to cover in a newsroom during E3.
Yeah, it hurts.
It hurts.
It hurts.
So the reason for this, apparently, is because Nintendo is having some challenges adjusting to work under quarantine. And we talked about this with Takfuji.
We did.
And how this is a bigger shift for Japan than it is for other parts of the world. And part of I love that conversation. I've referenced it in offline conversations with people a number of times. Because what was so cool about it was the understanding just fundamentally about how game design documents, you know, are a core piece of the process, even though their format has changed significantly over the years.
Certainly.
But how they're used in the West and how they haven't up until now been as widely accepted in Japan.
Exactly. And what Tak had told us is that there is a common language among game developers and game designers where it's not something that they have to necessarily put down on paper. They are just working with other developers and designers and other workers and building these games in person. It is very much so an in the office kind of process, and being able to do something like that where there is no shared language and there is no like face-to-face contact in a place like Japan where it is culturally, it's not even that it's not culturally accepted. It's just not something they do culturally. They don't do work from home. It's just not what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So working under quarantine for something like Nintendo, I'd imagine that a lot of their marketing efforts have been like, I don't know, what are we going to do?
Yeah. I mean, the good news is that they were set heading into this because of Animal Crossing. So it's not like they've visibly stumbled.
No, absolutely not.
And we're still going to see Xenoblade Chronicles, the definitive edition, coming out at the end of May. So it's another big first party title. Again, that transition, bringing most, if not all, of the Wii U's catalog over to
which will
Switch.
Be good because the Wii U and 3DS eShops are going to be closing soon.
Well, we saw that. We know that it's happening in Latin America.
Yes.
And there was one other there. So it's pieces of the world. I am nervous about that because I have a lot of 3DS games digitally and not all of them fit on the current memory card. But I understand that you can, even though the 3DS supports up to 32 gigs out of, you know, right when you pop it in. Apparently you can reformat 128 gig memory card as a FAT32 and it'll read it. So the second that they say, like, okay, by the way, North America,
you guys got
download all your stuff, like, it's going to be a scramble for a micro SD card and downloading as many games as possible, because that was the time where I was working for a major outlet, so there was a lot of codes that came my way. I do not want to lose those games. The 3DS is an amazing system.
Agreed.
So one thing, Amanda, you know, I think there was some speculation from some people that this was directly related to E3 getting canceled.
It's not. There's no way that this is. The stuff around E3 is very in person, and Nintendo Direct and Nintendo Treehouse. Well, Treehouse is at E3, but Nintendo Direct isn't. Like, this isn't a live press conference anymore. The last time they did a live press conference was, oh boy.
It was 2012.
Yeah, it must have been I was in that audience actually in 2012.
So was I? Oh, I was.
Interesting. Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating how our paths crossed without crossing at that time. But yeah, they don't do live press conferences. This isn't like Ubisoft or Microsoft or Sony or anything like that, where everything is very much so a live experience. For Nintendo, it's all recorded. So obviously, if they need to record stuff and they need to have those kinds of that kind of technology available, a lot of folks do not have the space at home to set up their own recording studios.
Yep.
That's not a thing in Japan. It is, you are living in tiny little places. So anyway, I don't think it has anything to do with E3. Yeah. E3 was just the vessel for the Nintendo Direct versus it being the reason for the Nintendo Direct.
Absolutely. Speaking of E3, we do have a bit of news that popped up like right before we started recording this. As you know, we have been chasing the E3 ESA story since the data breach about 14 months ago at this point. It was, I think, September of last year.
So no, it was the August. End of July.
It was the end of July. Oh, right.
Because I was at Gen Con.
Yeah, so it was about 14 months ago now. So in that time on Game Daily, when you and I were working, when you were the editor-in-chief there, when I was freelancing for you, let's see, we got the E3 2020 deck. We had some additional information about earlier data breaches that happened that hadn't been disclosed by the ESA. We have been on this story
for almost a year. It hasn't been over a year yet, but it has definitely been almost a year.
So, you know, there was some other stuff that popped up, like, you know, we got some of the information when E3 was about to be canceled. There was some additional information. I think we broke the news that on this show that E3 was going to forego its digital event as well. There's some other stuff that you know we're kind of tracking down related to this, but someone reached out to me today. I received some visuals and then was able to confirm this. So the ESA works with a number of organizations in order to pull off the E3 event. One of them is Dollaher Events. They're responsible for the press registrations and running the E3 show floor.
Yeah.
As you might understand, Dollaher, we understand was connected to the data breach somehow, especially since when we reported that the ESA had been notified a year in advance of the data breach and did nothing about it. That email, likely the alias was a site or an email address that was monitored, we believe, by Dollaher Events because it was related to registration.
Yeah.
Today, Dollaher Events CEO Mary Dollaher's email was hacked. A phishing email went out from that email address. We were able to confirm this with Dollaher Events. Mary Dollaher responded with a statement to Virtual Economy saying that she was, quote, happy to report that the hacker didn't gain access to anything related to any of her clients. So that means that if she is correct, that there wouldn't be anything related to it. However, if someone got access to her email address and she uses IMAP email, which most of us use these days, not POP3, how would she know, man? Did you have any insight on this about how she would be able to verify with, you know, completely that no one accessed any of her email?
No. I don't think so. I mean, unless things have changed drastically in the years that I was a network admin, I mean, I don't think so. But we can always, well, you know, what we can do is we can talk to some of our network friends. We have somebody that works in information security, and he's an InfoSec guy. So I can go talk to our good friend and see if this is correct. I don't think it is. I don't think there's any real way to know unless they have direct access to their own exchange server and they're able to see like where the emails went and they were able to trace it. I mean, there's really no way for us to know if they're telling the truth or they don't know what they don't know or anything like that. All we can do is just go on their word. And if they're saying that this is the case, we can't really prove them wrong.
Sure. And what we do know is that people who she had in her contact list who had received emails previously related to E3 from her or from her company did receive this phishing email. If you received one, delete it. Do not click on the links. It is a phishing scam. So just be real careful.
Yeah, because that won't just harm Dollaher, that'll harm you as well. You definitely don't want to be on the receiving end of some of these very sophisticated phishing scams. All right, moving on to additional events. Man, events are being canceled left, right, and center. So we heard today that EGX Rezzed, which takes place usually in, what was it, May?
I think so.
It's usually takes place in May. It was postponed to July.
In London.
Man, that would be a really great event to go to eventually. Mm-hmm. But they have canceled it for this year. So instead, they're moving EGX Rezzed out to 2021 and just saying, you know what, not a good year for this particular event.
Yep.
Now, the interesting thing about EGX Rezzed is that they are also managed.
They're ReadPop.
They're ReadPop.
They? Yeah.
That's correct. And so, who else does ReadPop manage?
PAX.
So there we have part of the puzzle as to why they're likely able to cancel their event in London, because London and the UK is like, all right, check it out. Probably shouldn't be doing this. And their insurance would be safe.
Mm-hmm.
They can't do that in Washington yet. They can't do that in Seattle. So that does confirm that they are willing to make the responsible choice that this isn't about the bottom line. This isn't about just hanging on to everybody's money or making people think like, oh, hey, we're definitely going to hold this. There is almost no way PAX West is going to happen this year based on this information.
I think you're right. I think as much as I would love for that to happen, I love that show.
PAX West has, I've been going to PAX West since 2008, since before I was a game journalist.
And
so.
I think 2013 was my first year. So I've been going for 7 years. So it doesn't look good for PAX West. The other show we have our eye on is the rescheduled GDC Summer, which was supposed to take place in July,
August? I believe. Yeah. And I don't know. Oh, no, it was August. Yeah, it was the tail end of August. Yeah, I'm really bummed about that because I think that GDC Summer could have been something really interesting. I think that what's going to end up happening is that we're going to see GDC Summer end up moving online again because I don't know, man, they moved so fast and they were so nimble with their last online content. I'd love to be able to see them do like bigger roundtables, more inclusive. I mean, that's the bonus of having this digitally, right?
Sure.
Is being able to bring people in that don't have, you know, might not necessarily have the means to attend GDC IRL.
Mm-hmm.
And here they are being able to attend digitally.
Right. So August 4th through 6th, I just looked
at the dates. Okay, so it was the tail end.
It was the beginning of August, not the end of July. So just giving you the framework. So now we have EGX Res canceled in July.
Correct.
We've got San Diego Comic-Con canceled in July. We've got Gamescom because of Germany, you know, the German government being very, you know, laying down the law.
Oh, yeah.
Saying, hey, no
I wouldn't
events.
Mess with Angela.
Nope. So that's August canceled. So right now we're looking at GDC Summer, which is the beginning of August, and PAX West, which is the end of August. Oh, beginning of September,
because of the way Labor Day falls this year.
Which is really challenging, and this is a really challenging year for PAX to happen in September, because the worst case scenario for ReadPop, I think, is that if Washington opens on September 1st, you're going to have people who haven't booked flights, who have been cautious about tickets, even though full refunds are pretty much guaranteed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cautious about booking hotels. You know, all of that stuff, even though hotels you can probably cancel well in advance. It's the flights, right?
It's the flights. Because even though they are doing full refunds, it is challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that they're fighting anybody. It's that they're fighting their own internal bureaucracy.
Right. So you've got multiple factors here.
Yes.
You've got the travel to Seattle.
Which could be as simple as a drive if you live just, you know, across the border in Vancouver, which is what James and I used to do.
If the borders are fully reopened.
And they might not be. Because Canada's being the federal government in Canada is being relatively cautious. Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the issue of exhibitors. What happens if exhibitors aren't interested in attending?
And see, that's the thing, right? If you think about, like, if we were exhibitors, if we had stuff that we were going to sell at PAX, or if we were going there to represent a gaming company or something, whatever the heck mm-hmm. it is, I would not be putting my money towards PAX. I would not be. I would write PAX off for the year and be like, look, we're just not doing it. There's no sensible way to pull this off, not knowing where we will stand with COVID-19.
Yep. And we know, and we look at how early it was that some game publishers and game companies were not sending people. They were the first ones to say, we're not sending people to GDC.
Absolutely. So those are the biggest ones. Even Unity. Mm-hmm. Unity's in San Francisco. And they're like, nah, we're not sending anyone.
Facebook also.
Yeah, Facebook as well.
So if they were the first ones to say, okay, we're not going to send employees, they're going to be the last ones probably to let the leash go a little bit. Absolutely. And say, all right, you can travel for work again.
Yeah. I mean, that puts a significant amount of risk, not just on the company and the money that they may have spent on securing a venue that may end up things may not end up working. They're putting their employees' health at risk, which a lot of these big companies, especially when it comes to knowledge workers, they don't tend to want to put their lives at risk. Now, mm-hmm. we can have a conversation about Amazon putting its people's lives at risk another day.
Yeah. So, our eye is still on summer events and what's going to happen there. And then we look ahead to early this year in November before Thanksgiving is PAX Unplugged.
Yeah, and there's also New York Comic Con.
Oh, in October, correct.
In October. So that might be a hard sell, too. I mean, New York City is a mess right now.
It is.
And the Javits Center is being used as...
Oh, of course.
As a hospital.
It is. It's being used as a medical facility. So there might not be a Javits Center available for Comic-Con come October.
So we're just going to have to continue to evaluate. And we'll keep checking back on these various events and, you know, talk a little bit more about, you know, what the exhibitors might be going through and the venues and everything like that and what's going on in the world. So,
yeah, it's looking like that 2020 is kind of a wash right now.
Especially when it comes to events. But where it is not a wash, where it is not a wash, Mike, what did we get?
Oh, that was a couple of days ago.
Was that days ago?
Yes.
That was a year ago. No, it was a year ago.
I'm actually right now looking when we actually talked about this, how far back we talked. Oh, it was, we talked
delayed
about this
indefinitely.
Back, delayed indefinitely was back episode 9 on April 3rd. So it was right around then.
It was almost a month ago.
Wow. Okay. So it was a month ago.
Almost a month ago.
That we found out that Sony was indefinitely delaying mm-hmm. The Last of Us Part 2 mm-hmm. and Iron Man VR.
Yes. Delayed yeah. indefinitely. It was the indefinitely portion of this that really threw us off.
It was. But we have some good news, as you alluded to.
Yes. It was a double-sided sword of happy news and not so happy news. The yes. happy news is that we finally have a release date, and it's actually not too far in the future. The Last of Us 2 is going to be releasing on June 19th. Ghost of Tsushima has a brand new release date, so it's not bumping up hard against The Last of Us 2.
Because that was originally scheduled for June 26th.
Exactly. Now that's coming out on July 17th. Likely this has to do with distribution and marketing. Mm-hmm. So maybe they have firmed up their supply chain to make sure that their production schedule can be, you know, relatively normalized.
I think that they've been... This was, I think, Dan Ahmad. From Nico Partners was talking about this on Twitter, that his belief is that they used the extra time because delayed indefinitely turned into a delay of 3 weeks is what it turns into.
Yeah, delayed indefinitely was really, that's really difficult language.
It is.
And it's difficult to backpedal from that language.
It's an admission from a company that says, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know how long it's going to take us to build up supply
yes.
to be able to meet demand for those that are purchasing physical copies. Now, in some places, digital is still huge, right? And some yep. places, physical is still really important.
It really depends on what your internet infrastructure looks like and whether or not it's more expensive to purchase the game physically versus digitally. In some places, like I know in Australia and New Zealand, those physical copies are hecking expensive.
Mm-hmm. And so we hope, our hope is that with 3 additional weeks to go to market, because mm-hmm. this was really a go to market issue.
Yeah.
Because they said the game was practically done. It was polishing. They were on schedule mm-hmm. to meet their original deadline, which was a couple weeks from now.
Yeah.
So we suspect that if you are purchasing physically, your copies will be available. However, remember, there's a lot of pieces in the chain. Obviously, there's manufacturing to wholesaling to retail to shipping.
Yes.
Now, we typically purchase our games from Amazon.
We do. But we have also, we've been using Target
mm-hmm.
and Best Buy as well, because sometimes Target and Best Buy are a little bit more reliable than Amazon can be right now, because Amazon is also responsible for the essential household, not even just household items, but essential items being shipped out to businesses, to hospitals, to, you know, frontline workers and everything like that. So, I mean, they're doing their best to keep up with demand, because their demand went through the roof.
Yep. And now, it wasn't so bad at the beginning of the quarantine, but now it's like a week. You know, mm-hmm. Amazon Prime is always like a week
yeah.
or more. So if you are interested in picking up a physical copy, I would look at a local retailer. I wouldn't rely on Amazon to deliver you that game mm-mm. day and date. I expect that this delay, this indefinite delay that turned into a 3-week delay, ensured that even from Amazon, you're going to get your copy a couple of days late instead of a couple of weeks late.
Yeah.
And you sure. can, and at the same time, if, you know, you pre-order a physical copy from Best Buy or from Target or from another or local from retailer, Walmart.
Or Costco.
Absolutely. You're likely to have a better chance of getting that on or close to that launch date of June 19th. But this release date came hot on the heels of some not great stuff that happened.
That is the other side of this sword. So the nasty part of this is that The Last of Us 2 suffered a major leak. We're not just talking like, oh, we got to see 10 minutes of gameplay. It was the whole damn game.
Wow.
The whole game, Mike. Can you imagine sinking 5+ years of your life into building a game, of which you don't have too many games in you because you're working in AAA, and AAA takes, you know, anywhere between 3 and 5, if not more, years to create these games, and seeing your life, seeing that part of your life prematurely, like, thrown out into the world without care to what it does to your team, to your people, to your livelihood, to your mental health.
Yep.
So walk us through what happened, because, like, this has been really difficult for us to watch. We are friends. We have many friends that are developers, friends that are producers, that are, you know, that work in games in some way, shape, or form. And it has been it was a devastating blow.
So in terms of the inciting incident, we are aware of at least one individual then propagated throughout the internet by a number of individuals who obtained major, major spoilers in the form of game content mm-hmm. and blasted them out.
Yep.
And it was getting shared everywhere, and people, the weaponization of spoilers against people as a way to attack people is
that's bizarre. And I mean, it was happening to a number of our media colleagues, especially our friends over at IGN. It was happening to almost everyone that works at IGN. Mm-hmm. They had that weaponized against them.
I remember right when I started at Game Informer, BioShock Infinite had just come out, and I remember rushing to finish that game before I started there. And it turns out that people weaponized it against Game Informer employees. They were sending them emails with spoilers and stuff.
Unbelievable. So, and that's so bizarre.
It is a crummy behavior. So it is unclear right now who was responsible for the leaks. There was one theory that it was someone internal to the studio who was disgruntled. But the realistic part is that this is a game that is, as we just talked about, being manufactured and distributed all over the world, that you can get, anybody could get their hands on a copy if they are properly placed. Now, we've seen all sorts of weird spoilers pop up in the past.
For sure.
If you work for a company that makes merch for games right around E3. This is where a lot of spoilers and E3 leaks come from. Yeah. People who work for t-shirt companies, who work for companies that make various tchotchkes like keychains,
yeah.
USB drives that are branded.
Lanyards
is another one. Where posters at GameStop. There's a lot of leaks that come from GameStop.
That's true. And Best Buy.
And Best Buy, because there's the standees, right?
Oh, yeah. And I used posters. To work at Best Buy. I mean, there were some times when we were doing some big game releases and big game announcements and, you know, things were happening where they had employees sign NDAs. This was like way back in 2008, I think. Yeah, it was 2008 when I worked at Best Buy. So, I mean, dude, the land of spoilers. It is real, but this wasn't just a spoiler.
This wasn't just a spoiler. This wasn't like saying, by the way, this game is being announced at E3. This was
a malicious leak.
This was a malicious leak. We don't know who did it. Again, there is that one theory that's floating that it was somebody internal because so much of it.
There's no way to know who did it. It's not about pointing fingers. It's not about, you know, oh, this disgruntled employee did this because of how horrendous working conditions have been, you know, traditionally at Naughty Dog. We can't speak to that. We don't know what goes on inside Naughty Dog. We've heard
there have been reports. Yep.
We've heard rumors. We've heard reports, you know, but we don't know personally, so we can't really speculate on that. All we can do is just be like, hey, check it out. If you are working in a studio where crunch is particularly heinous, you got to organize and talk to your people and talk to the industry and get your story out. Don't just let it fester.
Yeah, and don't let this happen.
This is
the wrong way.
It is, because you are wrecking not just the game for the fans, like big Last of Us fans, but you are wrecking this for your former colleagues.
Yep.
And
you're ruining your own career, because
you're going to be found out.
Yeah, if this is internal to the studio, and
it's a big if. We do not know. We cannot speculate on that.
But we do want to point out that there are ways that this could be someone outside the studio. Remember, these games are pressed. They are shipped.
Yep.
If somebody nabs a copy and
they're particularly sneaky about it.
Yep. And they play it at home and record the footage, and they, you know, no one sees them playing it because they've gone offline and all that stuff. There are ways to do it. There are ways to obtain a copy of a game that is in manufacturing and distribution before it has been released, as we well know. So, what came out of that, though? Obviously, this is a news beat, right?
Yeah, of course it is.
So
it's not just a news beat for consumer media either. It's a news beat for industry sites.
So I want to ask you, you know, put your editor-in-chief hat back on for a moment. This story happens over the weekend. This was the part that happened over the weekend.
Right. This was the part that happened over the weekend.
Yes. How would you approach this?
Breaking news, actually. We have information here about GDC Summer. I was just sent an email from the organizers from 47 Communication. The organizers of GDC Summer have decided to adapt GDC Summer into an all-digital event.
Great.
So there we have it. GDC Summer is now going to be an all-digital event this summer. I love this idea. I'm so glad that GDC is going to be able to do this. And they are doing it, quote, "While we very much look forward to meeting again in person as soon as possible, we are moving forward with a plan to transform GDC Summer into an all-digital event in order to best serve our community. As so many game developers embrace remote working arrangements and online collaboration, we are inspired to adapt and deliver GDC in a digital format that will be available to everyone with an internet connection, and will work hard to deliver the high-quality content and networking opportunities GDC attendees have come to expect."
That's great.
Amazing.
Great. GDC for everyone.
GDC for everyone. I love this. Yay!
Excellent. All right, so that closes the loop on one of the two events that we had our eye on.
It does.
So we'll see what happens with PAX West. I suspect we won't hear anything for a little bit yet.
I think it's going to be another month, maybe more, before we hear anything more from ReadPop on that. Okay. We are going to, like we said earlier, we'll just keep an eye on it. Okay, right. So back to what we were actually talking about before I got that email.
So put your editor-in-chief hat back on for a second. This story happens on the weekend, Monday morning, newsroom hits. What are your principles for covering a story like this?
So one of the most important things to do, especially if you're an industry-facing site, this isn't about being a consumer site or not for me, because when I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking about both my audience and the people that I'm trying to serve. So back when I was running Game Daily, the audience was made up of industry professionals and, you know, industry enthusiasts as well, but it was mostly professionals, folks that are making games, that are talking about games, that are analyzing games, that are deeply involved in the minutiae of the game industry. Is my audience going to be served by directly linking to the leak? Because this isn't a spoiler. We have to call it what it is. A leak is a leak. This malicious leak of content. And from my perspective, even if I was working, and this is just from my perspective, even if I was working on a consumer site and I were running the consumer site, knowing that that would do damage to the game industry, but it would serve my audience, would put me in a really uncomfortable position. Versus on an industry site, I already know the answer. The answer is the link would not be there. It would not be there at all. I would consider that an unethical thing to do, especially because my audience is comprised of the folks that are making the games.
I appreciate that perspective. I think because I worked for, you know, when I was a Game Informer, it's a consumer facing site, my call would have been do not include the link. And why is that? It's for the same reason. It's you have to
even though it would have served your audience.
Would it have served my audience? What is the angle of the story? For me, the angle of the story for my audience, what would have served them would have been be careful, be aware that this is out there, and protect yourselves on social media. So that would be my angle to the story. I don't think that there is any benefit, and this goes back to my feeling about spoiling the existent, like spoiling major details about a game that hasn't been announced yet. I think there's a consumer interest angle on, hey, this game has been leaked, like covering the Walmart Canada leak before, you know, the Rage 2 thing. I still love that story.
Oh, Canada.
And Pete's face. So that's Pete Hines' face on stage when look. Addressing it. That I have a screenshot that I used that in our marketing panel. Just because it's the best look of Uncle Pete being disappointed in somebody. He's not mad. He's just disappointed.
He's just disappointed in you.
So there is value, I think, in reporting on the existence of this happening. Hey, major game, full leak. For me, it's encouraging people, if you don't want to be spoiled, as a reminder, here is the way to block these, to mute these keywords on social media. Be aware. You know, close your DMs. You know, yeah, or don't look at your
message requests.
Yeah, your message requests.
So I think that that's where there's a little bit of that discomfort in that audiences have changed, right? We're old. We don't want our games to be spoiled because we don't want to deal with it. That's not cool. It's part of the magic for us. But for some people, they just want to know right now. They want all the information right now because we live in a world of Let's Plays. Sure. We live in a world of streaming. We live in a world of other people playing games that we watch, which there's nothing wrong with.
But there's an element of choice there. And sure. This is where I come back.
Okay, that's fair.
And
that's fair.
I know that this kind of leak gets weaponized against people. Mm-hmm. And not just people in the media. It gets weaponized against
anybody.
Against anybody. So, and this happens with, you know, reality TV spoilers and all that.
Remember when we used to watch reality TV than baking show?
Yeah. I was a Survivor guy back in the day.
I mean, James and I watched Survivor for 6 seasons. It's pretty good. But so, yeah, I remember that. I remember even back then, you know, before social media really took off, I mean, getting spoiled while standing around the water cooler at work, like that was problematic too.
So let's walk down that path.
Okay.
If I had determined that knowing what's in the content, the leak, is of interest. Now, remember, this is, you know, we're talking about consumer-facing enthusiast media.
And whereas I was coming at things from the industry perspective, and again, as someone that ran an industry site and didn't just, like, I was in charge of the industry site, and previous to that, I still ran the site. I ran the content as managing editor. So this would be of zero interest to my audience. So there's no tension there. And I think that if you're looking at this from a management perspective, and I'm looking at this from managing editorial versus news versus like managing the news and the content itself, if I'm looking at the direction of the site, traffic, regardless of how you, regardless of whether or not you think it's going to be a big deal, man, that's going to be a big deal. That drives traffic, that drives eyeballs, that drives ad revenue. That is the tension and the broken thing about media as a business model.
But I think we're in agreement that there is a story here in that the leak exists.
Yeah, oh,
I don't
agree.
See the value, and we can break this down. I think no matter how you look at it, value to a consumer audience, value to an industry audience, value to my bottom line, there's no value that can be derived, I think, by including the link. The link is not fundamental to the story. The existence of this happening is the story. Now, let's also consider respect for our readership, because in two ways. One, for those that very much don't want to know and that don't want this propagated, and for the developers, remember, we cover developers, we interact with them. I don't want to be, and this is, you know, look, there are going to be uncomfortable encounters between media and the organizations and people whom the media covers. But I think this is one where you look at it and go, what value do I have? Am I hurting my relationship? Am I hurting some of my readers, even if not all of them? Am I hurting, you know, innocent developers who worked on this? Am I hurting my own credibility in the long run? Mm. Am I tarnishing the way people look at me? Am I sensationalizing a legitimate news beat?
Therein lies the real rub. So, am I sensationalizing a real news beat?
And I think at the end of the day, if you list all that out, if you do the calculus on paper, right, and say, who am I helping by this and who am I hurting by this, and including myself in the mix,
can't be fully objective.
No. Well, even like whether or not my byline is on it, or I am instructing or asking somebody to write that story on behalf of the outlet, the buck stopped with me as the news editor.
And the buck stopped with me as editor-in-chief.
So I think that, no, I don't think including that link is the right call. I think that it is, respecting our readership in a different way, our readership is smart enough to know if they want to go find it, they can go find it. It's out there.
Yeah.
Right? And anything we link, right, is gonna get taken down.
It's true. And I think that because you're getting more and more eyeballs to it. So I think that we're in agreement here. I think that where I can see the rub from the editorial management perspective is, okay, but those numbers. Okay, but if we are the site that has, you know, access to the leak and it's embedded on the site or whatever. I'm not saying that that is something I would do.
Well, hold on. That's even different. That's not even just linking to it. That's embedding site.
That is embracing that train wreck.
Now, hold on. Let me tell a story then. There was a game, a huge, huge game that was coming out. It had been back in the days of long announces. So this game had been talked about for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
People were hungry for gameplay, to see how it actually played. It was coming from a really interesting, high-quality studio.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people were super excited about it. There was a closed alpha running. The NDA was tight. Mm-hmm. If you were playing this game, you do not stream it. You do not capture. And what ended up happening was someone captured it. And we had the video file.
Oh, I remember this.
And I got in touch with the PR person on a weekend, like, hey, we've got this.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and remember, I think people in our organization were under NDA. We ultimately did not run it. You know, I think we reported on the story. Hey, this is out there. If you want to go look for it, you can go look for it.
Yeah.
And we could even mention, like, the name of the user, because that just helps the company, like, track down who violated the NDA. ultimately, again, that is a tough calculus, because you're looking at that and going, is this something? And again, there's a difference between linking to, and this is the case where we're talking about gameplay. It wasn't even story beats. It was just like gameplay. So it was, all right, in this case, do we link to it? Do we mention the, like, what is the value here? We're not really spoiling anything except how the game plays. So ultimately, no, we did not embed the footage. That's a step too
that
far.
That is endorsement.
Yeah. We covered it. We covered the fact that it was out there, that someone had violated the NDA and that footage was leaking. You see that kind of story all the time. I think that's a news beat.
I think that on some sites that's a news beat. Mm-hmm.
I don't think on Game Daily it would have been, but again, at this time I was working for Game Informer as a public facing site. It was the weekend.
Yeah, that news on the weekend, man. That's some stuff. I really appreciate this conversation though, because your roots have been in consumer media, and I mean mine has been too, but I worked for such small sites prior to my work at Mike.com, where we definitely would have covered it, but I think that my boss and my boss's boss would have been like, no, you're not linking it. That's mm-hmm. like, that's unethical. That's never going to happen. It's not okay. And that would have been a hard line no. And then moving into an industry site like Game Daily isn't huge, but it's extreme. It's very well respected. And there's a reason for that. You know, we followed very strenuous ethical guidelines, and they were, you know, you had to hit them anytime that you submitted a story mm-hmm. to me.
And I think at the end of the day, it does come down to a conversation about ethics.
It does.
Who am I helping? Who am I hurting? And is the content of a spoiler linking directly to it so beneficial to the story that it outweighs the harm that it clearly does to a number of people, as a consumer site, both in your readership and developers, and as an industry site,
the people in your readership. And they're not just people in your readership. These are the people that you are actively interviewing on a regular basis. Yeah.
And does it harm your ability to do your job moving forward? And I think the answer is yes.
It does.
I think yes, you stop getting people to talk to you.
They can't trust you.
Because they can't trust you. And you lose the trust. You absolutely lose the trust of your readership for those people who are like, why are you doing this? This is just, why are you helping perpetuate this?
I trusted you to walk a very specific line of, you know, no, we are an ethical site. We do report on leaks, especially if they are enormous.
Mm-hmm.
And we do not perpetuate those leaks. We report on the story and then we move away from it. And I mean, with Game Daily, it was always about context. It was mm-hmm. always about, no, we will report on the story and we are going to get developers to come and speak with us. We are going to get publishers to come and speak with us and talk about the impact that this kind of leak has, not just on the game itself and on consumers, but on the industry at large.
Yep. So I think that, and I think it's important for us to be very clear. These are our opinions.
Oh, absolutely.
This. You are going to have people who come down differently on this.
And
sort
that's
of
okay
thing.
Too. There needs to be room for different sites to handle this in different ways because different readerships are going to react to this in different ways. We cannot account for any of those audiences. Mike and I no longer, you know, we're no longer print journalists.
Mm-hmm.
This is our medium now. So when we talk about leaks like this, it will only ever be in a very high level context. And how does this affect the industry? And how does this affect developers? Because those are the stories that we're telling.
Absolutely. So regardless of, hopefully, if you did not want to be spoiled on this, you were not spoiled. No one attacked you with leaks.
Hopefully you muted all of the various keywords that you need mm-hmm. to mute. If you haven't done that yet, please do that on Twitter. I'm not seeing anybody doing this over on Facebook yet, you know, fingers crossed.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely everywhere on Twitter. So if you can, make sure that you mute The Last of Us 2,
TL. Last of Us Part 2, TLOU 2.
Yeah, and then it just like, or TLOU in general.
Yep. Now you can now mute from people who you don't follow.
Yeah.
So if you're very secure in your follows, you're good.
Yeah.
So
I mean that's pretty helpful too. So, you know, I think that this was a really important discussion, and it's not a discussion that happens very often, mm-hmm. especially between, you know, two people that came up through this industry in very different ways.
Absolutely. So first, thank you to our industry friends who took the time to speak with us about their feelings. We didn't name anybody by name.
No, and we will not.
It was mostly just to get some perspective before we talked about this. And our thoughts do go out to Naughty Dog. This is a rough thing to have happen on what is essentially the long eve of your game's release.
Yeah.
It's
heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Let's call a spade a spade here. This is absolutely heartbreaking for the Naughty Dog team. Regardless of what you think about them as a studio, regardless of how you feel about their tendencies towards crunch, this is still heartbreaking. These are still people that made this game, and they made this game to bring into our homes, into our lives, and they spent years of theirs to bring it to us.
Can't wait to play The Last of Us Part 2. Can't wait to get back to our replay of The Last of Us on PlayStation 4.
It's a pretty heavy thing to be playing right now,
it Johan. Is. It is, and it's worth a replay. I've not played it on PS4 yet. I played it on PS3 the first time. I did not play the remastered version, so I'm looking forward to that. But that about does it for this episode.
It does.
Yep. If you are an indie developer and you would like to be part of our regular indie spotlight, please send us an email at podcast@fsquare.biz or shoot us a DM at virtualeconcast.
All right. And I guess that's it for us for this week. This has been episode 15. Oh my goodness. It is episode 15. Thank you for listening to the Virtual Economy Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at @VirtualEconcast. I'm at Amanda Farrow.
And I am at Footerish, FUTTERISH.
You can also subscribe to our RSS feed if you are brand new to our show. That's at virtualeconomy.libsyn.com/RSS. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict, Stitcher, Google Play. Oh my goodness, we're everywhere. You can't escape us.
And if we're not somewhere, let us know and we'll show up there too.
Exactly. The most important thing that you can do to support our show is to subscribe. The subscriptions and everything like that help the algorithm gods know that we are in fact interesting mm-hmm. and worthwhile. And maybe they'll put us on a homepage one day.
Oh, that'd be
and
nice.
If you can, if it's possible on your platform, please review our show. Let us know how we're doing. And if you're not comfortable leaving a public review and you just want to talk to us directly, send us a DM. Our DMs are open. And you can also send us an email, podcast@fsquare.biz.
And that's also where you can DM us or email us with questions. You can DM us with questions. We love listener questions. Gives us something to research. Give you a thoughtful, well-reasoned answer. Gives us a little chance to reach out to our very smart colleagues throughout the industry so that we can get you the best information. And we'll be back soon. In the meantime, wash your hands, stay hydrated, and be good to one another.
And we'll see you next time.